Get ready for Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Listen in as Doug and Amy provide helpful tips on how to get ready for anything that comes your way. And now, your hosts, Doug and Amy.
Welcome, everybody. You're listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. We're broadcasting on top of the News Talk 1160 tower today, looking out at a beautiful, sunny, gorgeous day today.
It's a pretty one.
I'm really taken aback about how hot it's been this last week, too. I mean, it's only May, and we're already pushing 90? Mm. I mean, seriously, this is some weather we're getting this year.
Yeah, sign of the times, I guess. I don't know. It's strange. I'm really hoping that this is, you know, because last year was pretty mild, very rainy, and I'm really hoping that this year is not just going to be pounding us with the heat, because I don't care for it.
Yeah, I'm wilting as it is. I'm not a hot weather person. Mm-hmm. I spent 10 years crawling from AC vent to AC vent, But, you know, I'm kind of hoping that this year it won't be as bad, but I think that we're in for a rough summer.
Yeah, well, bite your tongue. I hope not. I hope you're wrong. Well, you know, we're going to talk today about the great outdoors, which I'm very excited about our topic today. And being Ready Radio, we're all about preparedness. You know, our core topic is all about emergency preparedness. And of course, our sponsors, TruPrep, help us to put this on every week. But I'm excited about what we can learn just getting outside of these walls and into the great outdoors.
You know, it's a big topic, and we talk about emergency preparedness, but emergencies take on a variety of scales. You know, we've talked about super volcanoes, we've mm-hmm. talked about hurricanes and tornadoes, and now we're kind of getting down to the more basic emergencies, I guess you'd say, where, you know, if you're out camping and you get a major burn, or if you're out hiking and you break a limb. I mean, there are things that are true emergencies that don't affect hundreds of thousands of people. They affect you and your family, mm-hmm. and you need to be just as prepared for those emergencies, the mundane emergencies, as you do for the zombies and the apocalypse.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, emergency could be as teeny tiny as getting a little tick and you know, getting Lyme disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of the things that I really wanted to discuss today, is the effect of all of the bugs that are out there, not just germs, but also insects. You know, you've got mosquitoes and West Nile virus, which I haven't heard a lot about lately, but that was a real big one a couple of years ago. And then Lyme disease. I have a friend who developed Lyme disease from a tick bite and spent years fighting it, mm-hmm. trying to just get back to a normal way of life. I mean, it's astounding how something so small can utterly change your life.
Yeah, that's crazy. And then, you know, kind of looking at different plants too. I mean, just the poison ivy and poison oak. You know, we were this 2 weeks ago, we were out camping and hiking out on the AT, and
That's the Appalachian Trail for people who are listening to us on our website or our podcast who might not be East Coast natives.
Right. Yeah, from the top to the bottom. Yeah, we only did a teeny tiny little stretch. And let me tell you, it was straight up, Doug. It was straight up. I learned a lot about my bug out bag on that trip. Oh. But yeah, I'll tell you all about that
later. Did it get a little heavy for you?
Yeah, it really did.
You were jettisoning those cans of Keystone meat left and right?
They were out of there. You kidding me? I was like, the lighter, the better. So, but you know what? I actually did end up with some itchy spots. And it was kind of right around my belt line where I was holding my backpack. And it was kind of later at night. And I was concerned looking back. I thought, you know, I might have laid my, because I took my backpack off a couple of times just to rest. And I thought, well, shoot, did I lay this thing down in some poison ivy and didn't realize and buckled it back up?
Right.
But yeah, a couple of the fellow campers forced some Benadryl down my throat, and I went to bed, well, to my hammock, and that was that. I woke up and I was doing better, but it was good that, and I actually didn't have the Benadryl with me, so I'm glad one of my buddies did.
Well, you know, that's something that we really need to discuss, is what makes a good first aid kit for everyday uses. And, you know, people tend to think of first aid as being Neosporin and bandages, but there's a whole bunch of over-the-counter medications that are really essential to keep on hand. And Benadryl, you know, if you have an allergic reaction, not only to things like poison ivy and poison oak, but, you know, a bee sting or something else, mm-hmm. when you're out in the middle of nowhere, if you've got a, you know, 3-hour hike back to civilization, that's that's not so good if you don't have something to administer on scene.
Yeah, you're right. And Doug, I actually think that I might be allergic to bees, where I wasn't as a child. Because I was stung a couple times as a child, and yeah, it hurt, of course. But the last time I was stung was about, I want to say 3 or 4 years ago. And I was stung on my thigh, and it welted up. My entire thigh turned red and very hot and just kind of the heartbeat in it. And I was like, this doesn't seem right.
Do you know if it was a normal honeybee that stung you?
Yeah, I think
you?
It was, yeah.
Okay, because mm-hmm. I know that there's been a lot of Africanization of bees that have come over, and that they're hybrid in this area particularly. They used to call them killer bees because mm-hmm. they were more aggressive. But they're now finding out that the bees that are mixed with the African honeybees are more resistant to disease and parasites, and the plague that has been going through our honeybee population doesn't seem to affect hybrid bees.
Oh, sounds like the plot for a good movie.
Well, you know, it's interesting because there are honeybees over here are rather domesticated at this point. They've been bred for generations and generations and been kept in captivity, and they're not having the same resistance to new diseases that their wilder counterparts have. So mixing new genetics back into the mix is causing them to be a sturdier breed, which is, you know, kind of a interesting plot, I guess, in and of itself, because you see a lot of that in a lot of our food animals. You know, we've got the leghorn chickens that are just not as sturdy or as well. I mean, they're bred for producing eggs in mass quantity. They're mm-hmm. bred to have large breasts and be good meat chickens, but their lifespan is only, you know, a year and a half compared to I guess we could call it a heritage breed chicken that would have a 3 or 4 year lifespan. So, you know, you're cutting their lifespan in half to up their production. And you see that trend in so many different, you know, horticultural avenues these days, where it's all about production and it's not really about quality of life or the quality of the food that you're producing.
Yeah, you know, I've even heard of chickens that I guess they've been bred, you know, to become so large so fast that they can't even sustain their own weight and can't even stand up on their own legs.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it was like Discovery Channel or something. I saw that on once.
It's really weird the way we're moving. You know, cows are like that too. They're not quite that bad off, but the shape of the cow today is not really natural to what you've seen a North American bison. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very large up front and they're very small in the back. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is because the muscles they really need are the muscles up front, the brisket.
Right.
Now, how much do you get for brisket in the supermarket?
I don't know. You know, it's been a while since I've ordered briskets.
$3-4 a pound mm-hmm. at the supermarket, which means you're probably getting about 80 cents a pound for it on the hoof. What you want, what's the most expensive cut of meat?
I guess that would be the tenderloin.
There you go. Okay. And the tenderloin on a bison is very, very short.
Mm-hmm.
Where on a cow, it's incredibly long. Because they've been breeding it for generations. Since the 1400s, people have been breeding cattle to make that loin as long as possible.
Wow.
And that's why cows are shaped funny compared to bison. Because
that's weird.
They've been genetically engineered over centuries to have the longest loin possible because it's the most expensive, tender, juiciest, best cut of meat. Now, does it do anything for the cow to have an extra long loin? No. It actually makes them, you know, more susceptible to having back problems because they're stretched out. But what does it matter? This is what we're making. We're creating creatures by breeding them. And now we've gone to, you know, the mad scientist phase where you can actually create creatures by splicing genomes together.
This is going a very weird direction right now.
Well, you started with the honeybees.
I did, yes.
And mixing honeybees gets you to a different type of bee.
Yeah,
and we've been doing that as humans have been altering the world around them since we were created. Mm-hmm. Ever since we've been here, we have been using our intellect to change what's here. And, you know, I remember taking an anthropology class where they were talking about, you know, the first real farming was created by people gathering. And then as they brought the grains or the fruit back, then they would drop some. And then over successive generations of doing that, they would have, you know, the stuff grow closer and closer to their camp. And therefore, you know, you're getting better grains to grow in the path that you were carrying it, blah, blah, blah. The overall theory, though, is sound, that humans look for the best, and then they try to figure out how to get the best with the least amount of work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's
for sure.
Just human nature.
Yeah.
And so we have agriculture. We've found the best seeds, and we start to do it. And we know how to pick, to put to, shoot, look back to Genesis in the Bible,
mm-hmm.
when Jacob worked for his uncle when he was trying to get his second wife. His uncle put him in charge of all of the cattle and said, you can have the ones that are this type of cattle, and mm-hmm. I'll keep the other type. Mm-hmm. And he went to a breeding program to increase his own stock at his uncle's expense. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a story that's 6,000 years old mm-hmm. talking about selective breeding programs.
Yeah, if you
like
it, yeah.
That's what we do as humanity. We try to figure out the best stuff and make it better and make it easier and give it to everybody. And that's the whole point of farming.
Yeah.
Before, if you're hunting and gathering, and this kind of leads us back to prepping. If you're out there hunting and gathering, you might be able to make enough for yourself. It's possible, if you're really good at it, that you'll scrape up enough for a very small family. But if you're farming, you not only feed your family, you feed every other family too. One person farming can feed an entire town. That opens up everybody to do other jobs. That's the whole way our entire economic structure is built on agriculture. I know we're coming up on a commercial break, folks. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. And we're kind of trying to talk about the great outdoors today. And we're, you know, Doug, I think you and I just have a little bit too much fun, and we go off on some awesome rants here and there. Interesting ones. They took some very interesting little, you know, twists and turns, but we're going to twist back onto camping.
Okay, so you said that you'd gone up the Appalachian Trail.
I did. For the first time, actually.
And you were heavily burdened?
Sure. Yes, you could call that. With the backpack that I was toting up there. Now, I will say, it was much better this time around, because what I'm trying to do is learn from, you know, it's typically called a bug out bag. I like to call mine my get home bag. I'm not even really sure where the term was coined from, the bug out. I don't know. I think it's military. I'm not quite sure. But anyway, you know, when you're trying to get home, or when you're trying to get from point A to point B, you know, I think I'm going to call it my point B bag. I kind of like that.
But
anyway,
that.
Yeah. So we went on an initial camping trip. And that was just basically, you know, we weren't walking very far. It was just kind of living out of our bag for the night with, you know, the food. And we have, you know, our tents, or I have a hammock that I love. And just kind of learn from it. Let me tell you, that thing weighed 1,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought, you know, I might get bored. So I put in a couple, you know, decks of playing cards. And I was like, well, I brought a couple cans of food. And of course, I needed my can opener. And now, let me tell you, I got heavily picked on by the guy who was leading the thing. He's been doing this for quite some time. And he was like, are you kidding me? And he's pulling all of this stuff out. He's like, you don't need that. You don't need that. You don't need that. And he was right. I mean, the night that we were there, the amount of stuff that I actually used was maybe a quarter of what I packed.
It's kind of like that scene in Black Hawk Down where they're going through. You don't need that. Just bring water and ammo. That's all you need, water and ammo.
Right.
We're only going to be out there for 3 hours.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, I did, you know, I for the trip, I knew we were going to be hiking for a while. I knew that we were going to be going uphill for quite a while. So let me tell you, I took a lot of stuff out. I kept the stuff that I really needed. And my bag weighed, it was about 32 pounds
mm-hmm.
all together, which was pretty good.
Would you say that this is a fair statement? The more knowledge you have, the less stuff you need?
I would say that's very accurate.
You know, you get to a point where if you know that you can find water wherever you're going, you know where you can, you know, scavenge food, you know that you can, you know, all you'll end up needing is a knife and maybe a small sleeping bag, and you're down to 20 ounces total.
Mm, well, yeah, and there's a big difference between need
and want.
And want, yeah. And a lot of the stuff that we do, you know, kind of when you get into this sort of thing and you're looking at your get home bag, or you're looking at, you know, things for sustainability, you know, a lot of this stuff is the comforts that we're used to.
Yes.
And, you know, because when you're packing a down comforter, you know, on your trip, it's nice and warm and fluffy. So, we had one guy, he just brought his Whoopi. That's all he brought.
Really?
Yeah. A little shout out to you, buddy.
Wow.
So
impressive.
Yes.
Most impressive.
Yes. Yeah. He brought his wubby. Well, he thought it was going to be warm enough where it turned out it really wasn't. It was mm-hmm. very fluffy and soft,
mm-hmm.
but he realized, and this whole trip was a learning experience, and he realized that it wasn't warm and he froze to death. It was soft and comfy, but he was very, very cold that night.
Yeah.
So.
You know, it's interesting that you say it's a learning experience, because that's really a way that you can take all of these vacations that we're doing. You know, we're coming into summer and everyone's going to be taking weekend trips. Everyone's going to be taking a vacation, whether you're going down to Savannah for the beach, whether you're going to the mountains, whether you're going to go see some sights in the Great Plains, if you're going to, whatever you're doing, this is an opportunity to test out some of your gear. I mean, if you're going to be taking the Great American Road Trip, it's a good way that you can pack your car and see what you actually use and what you need and what is important for being away from home for 3 days. Granted, you'll be staying in hotels and things. You'll have, you know, a lot more comfort than you would if you had to stay in your car. But maybe instead of staying in a hotel one night, you throw a tent in the back and you stay at a Campground of America and stretch it out and see what it's like to actually live out of a car across country for a few days if you had to, you know, evacuate a city for a disaster. And it would be fun for the kids. It'd be fun for the whole family in a way, but it's also a learning experience and a way to shake out some of the bugs in the system.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And I think, you know, some people do have their vacations already planned, but maybe some people don't and they're looking for something to do. And, you know, getting into even car camping, I mean, it's a complete different thing than hike camping. Because when you're hiking or bugging out or getting home, it's just what you can carry. Mm-hmm. But when you're car camping, I mean, you can kind of bring in some fun,
yeah.
You know, and it is a lot of fun. I mean, you know, for people who haven't done car camping, there's a lot of great stuff. And if you leave the TVs behind and the cell phones behind, you kind of really get to bond with your family. And I mean, we were raised, you know, camping and always loved. Let me tell you, Doug, I don't care, as far as my favorite food, I don't care what it is. If it's cooked over an open fire, I don't know, there's just something about it. To me,
yes.
Love, love, love it.
That's why I go to Burger King.
What? Oh, no.
Flame broiled right in the store.
No.
I'm sorry.
Nothing like a campfire.
That was bad. I'm sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I agree. There's a lot of nostalgic feelings for being out and camping and focusing on each other, and it really draws the attention in. I mean, the greatest memories I have are of camping. I remember going camping when my daughter was only a couple months old, and the beauty of it, and we didn't go far, we just went up a mountain where there was no cell reception, but I felt like for the first time in a long time, the family focused on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was something else that I got when I lived in Alaska. I mean, we did some camping trips there. We went to the Kenai Peninsula and camped overnight once. And my wife did a class 5 whitewater rapid trip on that
oh, wow.
camping. Yeah, it was pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I can't swim, so they wouldn't let me play. So she took my spot.
Oh,
and
no.
She went down the rapids and nearly died. It was awesome. So there were 6 people in the raft, and before they got to the end, 3 of them quit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it was just her and the driver and one other person making the raft go down these class 5s. It was really impressive. Yeah. And she was when she got back to the base camp, we had went and set up the tent, me and the kids, and got everything together, and we were going to have dinner at this little restaurant on the way back to where the campground was. And she got out of the van, and she was walking like a cowboy, just barely waddling, maybe more like a penguin.
Right.
Kind of side-to-side waddle, because nothing was going to bend anymore.
Oh, no.
But it was a great experience for everybody. Everyone remembers it, because we were, you know, doing something together. And that's my vacation plan for this year, and I don't get to take very many vacations between all the jobs I have. It's just never worked out. Mm-hmm. But this year, I am going on vacation with the family. We're going to take 10 days off, and we're going to drive up to Mount Rushmore.
Mm-hmm.
And I want the kids to, because when we moved to Alaska, they flew, and I drove.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to go through South Dakota in a way that I had never been before. I stayed at Deadwood and I saw, you know, all the things on the freeway. I was in a hurry because mm-hmm. I was trying to catch up to everybody, but it was a gorgeous place, and I want them to see that. And I want them to experience the 3-day car drive up there
mm-hmm.
and doing things on the road and see the country. You ever see the Disney movie Cars?
Yes.
I think that is one of the best movies Disney ever did, because it focuses people on what we've lost in this country, which is taking their time to actually see the country. I mean, there's too many people who see the middle of the country as flyover states. They know what New York is and L.A. is, and they have no idea what's in between.
That's true.
I think you've got congressmen and senators who are sitting up there who, particularly senators, who only know what the major city is in their state and have never really been to their own constituencies, much less. And I know that a senator is supposed to be, you know, the Senate is the saucer to the hot teacup of the House of Representatives. But they're more than just representing their state. They are a part of representing the whole country in a more meaningful way than someone in the House of Reps is. And they don't go. They don't know. They don't know. I mean, look at the tragedy of what all was going on with Clive and Bundy and his ranch.
Yes.
And you've got the senator from that state standing up saying, "This isn't over. We're not going to have people stand up." He's never been out there to talk to these people and to see that they're, you know, people of the soil and know what they're talking about. He's not connected to them. If he can make that statement, he doesn't have a connection to those people. And I think that that's terrible. And how do you get to know people? How do you get to know what people are like throughout the country? You got to go talk to them. You got to be there. You got to go into the whistle stops to have lunch. You've got to get off of the freeway, which if they pass this, you know, they've been talking about opening it up to make freeways toll roads, the Federal Highway Administration.
I heard that, yes.
Yeah, if they do that, I think it's going to push a lot more people off of I-90 and onto Route 66 again. Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be people stopping at the little souvenir shops and people talking to each other. And the country's going to get more of that internal vibe that we had in the 50s and 60s of being united and understanding people instead of being this balkanization that we have right now. I think that it's just a terrible, terrible state we are in when people from one city don't understand the way people live just 40 miles away from their major metropolis.
Yeah.
It's really a changed world we are in. And the vacation is a great way to get people out and doing more. You can use this as a chance to test out your bag, to test out your plan on, you know, how you're going to pack your car, to realize that you're going to go and do and be away from your home. It's not going to be easy. And don't fall back on, oh, well, there's a Walmart every 20 miles. I can stop and get anything I need. Actually plan. Plan to have everything in your car. A, it's cheaper. And B, it's good practice to know what you're going to really need on a long trip.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I think we're trying to kind of decide what we're going to do. Now, we usually have a big camping trip that we do once a year. We go out for about 10 days and we tent camp. And my tent, we lovingly call the MASH 4077, because it's not the little bitty kind that you crawl into. It's the kind that you walk into, and it has like two rooms, and we put up the air mattresses and the tables and stuff like that. And, you know, that us, we dig it, and we load up the truck and, you know, and pack it. And we've even, you know, packed the grill. I'm talking not the little bitty, you know, fold-up grill. I'm talking the grill.
Yes.
That does smoking. But we're there for 10 days, and we just kind of hunker down. We put up tarps. We call it Tarp City, and because it rains up there a lot, and we have a lot of fun time. But I'll tell you what, Doug, let's take a quick break. We'll come back in just a few minutes, and we'll talk more about your vacation plans. How about that?
So, sounds great.
All right. Well, you're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, The Talk of the Town. We'll be right back.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. When we left for the last commercial break, Amy said that we were going to talk a little bit more about vacation plans.
Yes.
And I think that it's a good idea, and what I was expounding on is I want to take my family across country. And not everyone is able to take 2 weeks off and pile everyone in a car and go explore. So a lot of people do, you know, fly to a destination to do something there. I would encourage people who are in that boat to try to find something local that's a weekend trip that gets them back out into the great outdoors, whether that's, you know, going to a lake, going camping like you were talking about, or even going to the beach or to a swamp, just something that's more outdoorsy where you can see more things and get the kids involved in something other than just a video game.
Yeah, unplug them. They need to, you know, you need to unplug your children. And one of the places that's fairly close to where we live, Doug, is called Fort Yargo, and they have yurts. out there. Have you ever stayed in a yurt?
I actually have not stayed in one, but I had seen them when I was up in Alaska. Yeah. They have yurts there that you can camp in year-round, even in the dead of winter.
Really?
Yeah, there was a state park outside of Anchorage that did that.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. I've always wanted to stay in a yurt. For those of you who don't know, it's like a big round tent, really. Kind of, that's sort of on a base, like a, you know, I don't know. What would you, how would you describe a yurt, Doug?
I would describe it kind of as a tent with a top cut off, or a teepee with a top cut off.
Okay, sure.
More rounded.
Yeah.
But the idea is that a yurt is a movable structure, or something mm-hmm. that was carried around on, I believe it comes from Mongolia, and the steppes there
sure,
where they
that
were
sounds
able
good.
To, sounds good, where they were able to, you know, pull up tent and take it with them, but it was a more stable structure than, say, a teepee would be. It was something that you would live in for a couple of weeks before moving on as they grazed their animals.
Sure. Yeah, and they have, like, a big, thick canvas, and I know the yurts, I believe at Fort Yargo, they have, like, a little heating system in there, and there's no AC, mm-hmm. so I probably wouldn't go in the, you know, in the middle of summer, but yeah, you know, I was thinking just this past fall, I don't know why I didn't do it, but I was like, you know, a sabbatical out, you know, for a good weekend, or maybe a week, you know, yeah. just kind of take some books and you know, just go stay in the yurt. I think I'm going to do that this year.
I'm over here stretching because I'm trying to make a joke out of the word yurt, and it's just not coming. All I can come up with is that it'd be yo yurt, and then, you know, that'd be kind of curdled. But anyway,
sure. Well, we'll edit that out later.
Yeah, no, I think that activities like that are a great thing. You know, I have family in South Georgia, and one of the things I'm planning on doing is taking my kids on an airboat ride. So they can see the alligators in the swamp mm-hmm. and, you know, exposing them to different, you know, landscapes so that they see what the world is really like. I think that's a good thing. Another opportunity that comes up here in Georgia and across the country is as we get to the end of summer, and this kind of ties in with, you know, Troop Prep's extensive line of canning goods and supplies, is the state and county fairs. Mm. When you get to August and early September, you see a lot of fairs pop up. I know here in Georgia, they have a fair in Perry that's in the middle of October, where mm-hmm. it's still pretty warm by then, but it's a decent size, and they do the animal shows, and they, you know, show off the prize-winning preserves and whatnot. I hail from Minnesota, and I remember the Minnesota State Fair is one of the, you know, largest state fairs in the entire world. They've kind of vie with Washington State, and the Alaska State Fair reminded me a lot of the Minnesota State Fair in its layout, not in its scale, but in the layout and what was available there. But that's another great way to kind of tie your family into homesteading, traditional arts and crafts, things that really are a touchstone for Americana.
Yeah, and you can, you know, what's really neat too is when you take your kids to things like this, they really, a lot of times, being so young, they'll pick up on things that really do interest them. They'll, you know, things that'll spark their interest. And if you kind of take that and, you know, create some projects out of it. You know, like, I took my daughter out, something very similar, and she saw these teeny tiny itty bitty little white bunnies. They're dwarf bunnies or something like that. They were the cutest darn thing. And so I'm thinking, okay, raising rabbits for food is probably not a good idea.
I was just going to say, stew meat. There we go. Stew meat. We'll name this one stew. Right. And that yes. one we'll name, yeah.
Yeah, well, she's very attached to animals as pets. And, you know, I've never seen her around a chicken, so I don't know about that, but
chickens,
no, I did take it back when she was little. Yeah, yeah. Now my sister, she, you know, I actually have quite a few sisters with chickens, but anyway, so, you know, if great little projects, I think, that you can do with a kid. So, like, even anything as small as making homemade Play-Doh, mm-hmm. You know, just kind of getting their hands dirty. And just kind of see what it is that they're interested in. And a lot of these different fairs and things like that, you can kind of see what sparks their interest.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that, you know, my kids saw chickens at the fair up in Alaska, and that got them interested in doing more things with chickens. They're very attached to their chickens now. And, you kind of wonder sometimes how this little three-year-old can pick up a great big white chicken and carry it around like a baby around on the yard. But they love their animals, and it gets them more involved with the family, you know, collecting the eggs and feeding the birds. Mm-hmm. They feel like they're contributing, and that's a big thing, to bring the children into contributing to the family economy. Yeah. And all of these, you know, we used to teach home ec, and it really was. It wasn't just... Well, maybe it was a fluff class, but it wasn't a fluff idea. The idea that the home has its own economy, and you need to have a executive officer of the home to manage it, to make sure that it, you know, the boilers stay full and the ship runs on time and gets to where it's supposed to go. You have to have somebody who actually manages that and takes care of it and makes it flourish. And I think that all we're doing now, you know, the husband is off working full-time, the wife is off working full-time, the kids are in school full-time, and the home is just kind of a birthing place where they come back to sleep at night and then go off on their varied directions. Where is family in that? Where are people coming together to be something, to create, to enjoy, to prosper when everybody is thrown to the wind?
Yeah, and we do all that because of all the things that we want. And, you know, when the vehicle that I want costs, you know, $30,000, then, you know, it's just, that's what we do.
You have cheap tastes, Amy, because I think most vehicles now are significantly more than $30,000. I mean, just a full-size sedan is going to run you $40,000.
Yeah,
for a decent one. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was something that I was talking about with one of my friends. He was saying, you know, I haven't made the money I'm making right now. I haven't made this little an hour since I was in, you know, late high school working at a grocery store. And I said, yeah, and you know, the problem is that back then, how much did a decent entry-level car cost? Mm-hmm. He's like, well, you know, they're $5,000-$6,000 for a Mazda or a Nissan. I said, and how much is that same, you know, Honda Fit or Nissan entry-level cost now? He's like, well, minimum $15,000 to $20,000. Mm-hmm. Like, right. So people now are making the same money that they made 15 years ago, and they're making a third of the value. Oh. And you're seeing this shrink of buying power. And a complete loss of the middle class. I mean, we've talked about economics before, but this is dire, because when everybody has to work to make a home work, how do you have time to be a family? And, you know, I hate to sound paranoid, but I don't think that this is just random. I think that this is by design. I think that this is an attack on the family structure, that we are no longer being really allowed to be independent and have our own free time and to coalesce around common ideas and goals. Mm-hmm. And there's a real attack throughout all of our society on what family means. And this is one of the most devious ways that the family is really being destroyed in America today, is that we don't have off time. I mean, particularly if you're trying to avoid putting your children in someone else's care for extended periods. That means that you've got two parents, you've got kids, one parent works day shift, one parent works evenings, maybe they get to sleep at the same time, you see each other for a half hour. You cannot have a marriage a half hour a night. Mm-hmm. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't raise children. One parent, it's basically become a one-parent household on shifts.
Yes.
And that's not fair to the kids either. And it's not fair to the parents, because you spend your whole day working, and then you spend your whole evening trying to tend to things, and you're exhausted, because there's never a break. There's no give and take. There's no structure there. So how do you beat that?
Yeah.
Well, you either need more people involved in it, or you need, you know, enough money that you have free time to be together and do things. And neither one of them is socially acceptable.
Well, you know, I was just discussing with my – it's funny you bring that up, because just last night my husband was out of town. He came home, and he was like, what's going on with our bank account? And I'm like, I don't know. And he's – you know, and of course we're kind of digging through, and he's like, well, why are you spending so much money at the grocery store? And I'm like, because groceries are so expensive.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I told the person when I was checking out just the other day, I said, you know what? I'm just going to become a farmer. That's it. I think it would be more lucrative for me just to become a farmer. I'm just going to grow my own food, have a couple chickens, and you know, there you go.
There was a really interesting article I ran across on Facebook where they laid out how to turn your front yard into a garden so that every square inch was used to create food instead of having a lawn. Mm.
Yeah, you hear that, honey? That was my idea. He told me no, by the way.
Well, folks, on that note, I think we should take another commercial break.
Yes.
You're listening to News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. The episode today really has the common theme through all of these topics is that we need to look at every day as a teachable moment. And as you're getting ready for whatever disaster that you're contemplating, there's more to it than taking classes or reading books or watching doomsday preppers. There's a point where it becomes a lifestyle. And it's not a lifestyle of fear and panic. It's a lifestyle of learning. Mm-hmm. And when you take time to learn how your bag is too heavy, or that you need to have certain medications with you at all times, or that there's, you know, things out there that are bigger than ourselves, when you start to see these things, then you incorporate them into your daily activities. Maybe you have a Berkey sport bottle that you start using every day because you don't want to have all the contaminants in your water. And it's something that you realize, and then you incorporate it into your everyday. And when people start to say, that's a funky looking bottle, what's that bottle for? And you tell them, you know, well, hey, this one actually gets out viruses and bacteria and everything else. And I just like, you know, it makes the water taste better, so I carry it around with me wherever I go. And you start to not only learn from everyday experiences, but use everyday experiences to teach. You teach your children through things like going to fairs and going camping and going on road trips. It brings your family in. A while back, Amy, you said to me, well, what if your spouse doesn't really go for all of the preparedness stuff that you're trying to introduce? Well, here's how you do it. You bring it in through everyday living, and you say, hey, aren't you glad I had the first aid kit in the car? Aren't you glad I have a knife in my backpack for cutting through this whatever we're stuck with right now?
Kudzu, maybe.
Yeah, you gotta that is the nastiest weed on earth, isn't it?
It is, but let's not start that bunny okay. trail. You digress.
if whatever it comes up, if you have an answer for it, then it starts to show that these are the ways that we deal with situations that are unexpected. And it's not kooky, it's not crazy, it's not something out of the, you know, from the wild blue yonder. This is just everyday living.
Right. And we're not, you know, some people, I guess, when you look at emergency preparedness, there are different extremes. There are people who are prepared for a couple little things here or there, you know, maybe just, you know, of course, this tornado season, or, you know, all the way up to being prepared for if something were to happen over the course of a couple years, mm-hmm. When you get more into the homesteading and that kind of thing. But, you know, one of the things that I've kind of, and you talk about like the everyday life, one of the things that, you know, of course, Mother's Day is tomorrow. So yes. Happy Mother's Day, everyone. One of the things that my husband always kind of jokes around with his buddies is he said, yeah, my wife, she never asks for jewelry and, you know, all the girly stuff. You know, she wants a new knife.
I was going to say a tomahawk or machete.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's one of the things, Doug, that I find myself doing is if I'm out shopping, you know, maybe I'm at Sam's Club or wherever. I love Sam's, by the way. And if I see something that I'm interested in, one of the things I have actually kind of programmed myself to do is say, would this actually be helpful in an emergency situation? And I've always had my eye on is like the crock pot that has the three different, you know, yes. little, I love that because we entertain all the time. And then I thought, you know, in an emergency situation, this wouldn't do anything for me. But they had on sale recently, they have these big oven mitts. Uh-huh. That they have the silicone on the outside and they go up to like 500 degrees.
Right.
And I thought, you know, it was on sale and I'm like, oh, those are great. I could use some new hot pads. And then I thought, could I actually use this in emergency preparedness situation? I said, absolutely I could. Because mm-hmm. I can see myself, you know, grilling a lot more or you know, kind of handling hot food and hot items. So I thought, yeah, that would actually come in handy.
It's funny that you say that, you know, you don't ask for the girly things. That was something that a conversation my wife and I had just recently. She said, you know, you realize that just about everything I ask for comes from True Prep. I was like, yeah, I've noticed that too.
Right.
And they've noticed me shopping over there an awful lot lately. So, I mean, it kind of all pans together. But, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, a new flashlight, a new knife, you know, something for the kit, all these things that come in handy, mm-hmm. and you feel good about it. It gives you some euphoria from the purchase that you're looking at something that not only is useful, but it's new and it's, you know, kind of fun to have.
Yeah, and they have some great dehydrators over there. Mm-hmm. It's because right now, I mean, it's like strawberry season, and you can dehydrate some strawberries fruits.
And dehydrated strawberries that are powdered and added to drinks are just fantastic.
Ooh, I bet.
The trick is that you have to rehydrate them just before you add them to the drink, and they will be bitter unless you rehydrate them with a light syrup. Mm. So you take a couple of spoonfuls of sugar, put it in hot water, put the powder in there, make that slurry, and then add that to your like unsweetened tea. Mm. And it'll give it the sweetness flavor, but it'll be strawberry tea or strawberry lemonade or whatever you're trying to make. And that's a fantastic little trick. The other thing that you can use a dehydrator for is you can take and like the strawberries and puree them and make them into a mash. And then you pour that out onto the dehydrator, onto a piece of wax paper, and you get a fruit roll-up.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to be really creative, and this is one of my favorite tricks, is that you do the same thing only with like Prego tomato sauce.
Oh.
When you end up with your
fruit. That sounds like a nasty fruit roll-up.
It is a nasty fruit roll-up until you add it to boiling hot water at your campsite and get Prego tomato sauce right back.
Oh, there you go.
Weightless. Don't have to worry about anything. In fact, you can actually roll it around your pasta, boil the pasta, take and then add the sauce leather to the boiling water, make your pasta sauce, and pour it back over the noodles. Repurpose the water twice, and the starch from the noodles will make the sauce thicker.
That's pretty cool.
It is. Yeah. It's a really neat idea, and it's something that you can pull off if you have an Excalibur dehydrator.
There you go. Yeah. I had, when we were, and just kind of going back to our little trip, when we went hiking, we had a couple of the guys that came, and they brought their own dehydrated foods up with them, because what we realized was dehydrated and freeze-dried foods are much lighter weight than canned foods. So, but yeah, some of the guys brought up, one of the guys actually dehydrated macaroni and cheese. Like, I didn't know you could do that.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. And then another guy brought some oatmeal with some of the dehydrated strawberries in it. Just kind of constituted that all up together.
How was that? Were the strawberries a little bitter, or were they good?
No, he said they were really good. But I think he had some sugar in it, you know, once it was all kind of mixed together.
That's, you know, a lot of people think, well, it's fruit, so it's got a lot of sugar in it. And it's true. But when you concentrate and dehydrate it, you're taking all the water out, so everything's concentrated, and it doesn't equal out. I've always found dehydrated strawberries in particular to be slightly bitter. Mm-hmm. So they need a sweetener to really make them taste as they did when they were fresh.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of like them a little like that though.
Oh.
I've never really had much of a sweet tooth though. So that's just me.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go.
I like my sweets a lot.
I know you do. Yeah. Yes. I've seen your office.
Yeah, that's for sure. But there's a lot of different things that you can do that incorporates this into everyday life. And I think that vacations and vacation planning, your vacation should be fun. It should be enjoyable. But let's be honest. If you go to Disney World, what are you going to learn?
The Mickey Mouse song, I guess. I don't
know. Pretty much. Yeah.
How to be a princess.
There's not, learning how to be a princess in today's society. That is exactly what we need to be teaching our daughters.
Oh, that's their top priority.
Yeah, you're gonna find Prince Charming. It'll be happily ever after. Mm. You don't have to work for it. And that's why 50% of marriages all end in divorce.
Oh, yeah.
Because everyone's looking for their fantasy family vacation.
Yeah. I keep trying to groom my husband, you know, more like the Prince Charming. It's just not working.
Okay.
Yeah. I do my best. He's like, I'm not wearing those tights.
What you guys get up to is your business and none of mine. Let's put it that way. But, you know, I think that you should try to incorporate every day to be a learning experience. And taking a vacation that teaches something, that gets people more involved in their world and their environment, in their family, is a way to do it. And it shouldn't just be about amusement. Do you know the etymology of the word amusement?
I don't. Enlighten.
A in front of a word means not, or against, or anti. Muse, it comes from a Greek word to think. Mm-hmm. So amusement is to not think about anything. And that's really the society we've come to, is we want to be entertained. We want to be amused so we don't have to think about it.
Interesting.
Instead of being amused, be mused. Go and delve into it and have inspiration and find something that excites you and gives you passion. Whether it's going to Deadwood and learning about the Old West, whether it's going to Kennedy Space Center and learning about the future, who cares? As long as it's something that gives you more information, that gets you excited, that inspires you, that's what's worth doing. And that's what being prepared is all about, is that when an emergency comes, when something happens and that it's a life-changing event, we don't lose our inspiration, whether it comes from the past or the future. It doesn't change who we are, that we are able to go forward and be and do and to live life to its very fullest.
Yeah, well said. Well spoken. Now, you are very passionate about this. And I tell you what, we're getting very close to the end of our little broadcast today. So want to make sure that we mentioned our True Prep's product of the week. And this week we have the Grand Trunk Hammocks. So those things are very lightweight. They will, what do they hold up to, like 250 pounds, 300 pounds, something like that, Doug?
The smallest ones hold 250. The largest, the double ones, hold 450.
Yeah, those are fantastic. Let me tell you, to stick in a backpack.
Lightweight, very easy lightweight to compress.
And comfy.
And cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, they're half the cost of the more expensive national brands, and they're all the value. And I think that it's a great way for people to get into hammock camping when they wouldn't really have considered it before.
Yeah.
Folks, check us out on Facebook and Twitter, readyradio.net, www.readyradio.net. If you want to listen to old shows, you can also catch us on iTunes. Check out our sponsor, trueprep.com, also iTech Atlanta. Thank you for helping with all of our internet and website needs. Folks, you can find us here on this station every week. You're listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
You've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by True Prep. For all your prepping needs, visit True Prep online at truprep.com or visit a True Prep store in Roswell or Marietta. Tune in each week as Doug and Amy get you ready for anything that comes your way. Ready Radio, Saturday evenings at 5, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.